Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark LeVernier. Later on, we'll hear the story of Silent Night on the Hallmark Playhouse. But right now, it's the Textron Theater with the play A Child is Born. This first turned on CBS on December 22, 1945.
This is the Textron Theater.
And this is Helen Hayes.
Textron, maker of finest textile products, through the cooperation of America's great retail stores, presents a radio series of finest plays starring Miss Helen Hayes. And here is Miss Hayes.
Thank you. Our Christmas play is A Child is Born by Stephen Vincent Benet, and we are happy to welcome Jose Ferreira as our guest.
And here is A Child is Born by Stephen Vincent Benet, starring Helen Hayes and Jose Ferreira.
Time is time. The place is anywhere. The voices speak to you across the air to say that once again, a child is born. A child is born. There is a town where men and women live their lives as people do in troubled times. Times when the world is shaken. There is an inn. A woman sings there in the early morning.
Now what will you say of the child in the stable this cold winter day?
Singing again. I told you not to sing.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Forgot? That's fine. That's wonderful. That answers everything. The times are hard enough and bad enough for anyone who tries to keep an inn. The country's occupied. We have no country. You've heard of that, perhaps? Is it your business what King Herod does? Is it your place to sing against King Herod?
I think he must be a wicked man, a very wicked man. And I know somehow that kings should not be wicked and grind down the people. I know that kings like Herod should not be.
All right, all right. I'm not denying that. Still, there he is. He's king. How will it help if I go out and write on someone's wall, "Down with King Herod"? What's it worth? The cross for me, the whipping post for you, the inn burned down, the village fined for treason just because one man didn't like King Herod. For that's the way things are.
Yet there are men...
Oh, yes, I know. Fanatics, rabble, fools, outcasts of war, misfits, rebellious souls, seekers of some vague kingdom in the stars. They hide out in the hills and stir up trouble, call themselves prophets, too, and prophesy that something new is coming to the world. Lord knows what. Well, it's a long time coming. And meanwhile, we're the wheat between the stones.
Something must come.
Well, believe it if you choose. But meantime, if we're clever, we can live and even thrive a little. Clever wheat that slips between the grinding stones and grows in little green blade sprinkles on the ground. At least if you will not sing subversive songs to other people but your poor old husband. Oh, come, wife, I've got some news. I didn't mean to be so angry with you. You've got some queer fancies in that head of yours. Lord, don't I know, but you're still the small girl with the grave eyes and the brook-running voice I took without a dower or a price out of your father's house because... Oh, well, because you came. And they've not been so bad the years since then, now, have they?
No.
That's right. Give us a kiss. I couldn't help the child. I know you think of that this time of year. Well, he was my son, too, and I think of him. I couldn't help his dying.
No, my husband. I am a barren bough. I think and sing and am a barren bough.
Oh, come, come, come.
The fault is mine. I had my joyous season, my season of full ripening and fruit, and then the silence and the aching breast. I... thought I would have children. I was wrong, but my flesh aches to think I do not have them. I did not mean to speak of this at all. I do not speak of it. I'll be good. I'll sing softly, not sing at all. It was long past and gone. Tell me your news. Is it good news?
The best. The prefect comes to dinner here tonight with all his officers. Oh, yes, I know. The enemy. Of course, the enemy. But someone has to feed them.
And they'll pay?
Cash.
On the nail?
Yes.
Good.
I thought you'd say so. Oh, we'll make no great profit. Not tonight. I've seen the bill of fare they asked of me. Quails in midwinter. Well, we'll give them quails and charge them for them, too. You know the trick?
Yes.
Now, they must be well served. I'll care for that. The honest innkeeper, the thoughtful man asking, "Your worship, pray another glass of our poor wine. Your worship, is the roast done to your worship's taste?" "Oh, nay, 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 your worship. All was settled in the bill, so do not spoil my servants with largesse, your worship." And he won't. He pinches pennies. But once he's come here, he will come again. And we shall live, not die. And put some coin, some solid enemy and lovely coin under the hearthstone, eh? Spoil the Egyptians, eh? Hark, what's that? Oh, I'll go. The maids aren't up yet, lazy bones. A minute, just a minute. It's early yet. You needn't beat the door down. This is an honest inn. Good morning.
Hail Caesar. Are you the keeper of this inn?
Yes, sir.
Orders from the prefect. No other guest shall be entertained at your inn tonight after sundown. The prefect wishes all the rooms to be at the disposal of his guests.
All the rooms?
You understand plain Latin, don't you?
Well, yes, sir, but...
This is the prefect's feast, the Saturnalia. You've heard your orders.
Yes, sir. Yes, indeed, sir.
See, they're carried out. No other guests. Hail Caesar.
Hail Caesar. Well, that's pleasant. All rooms at the disposal of the prefect. No other guests. Remember, no other guests.
I will remember.
Yes, do so. It is an order. Now, about the quail. You'll make the sauce. That's the important thing. A crow can taste like quail with a good sauce. You have your herbs?
Yes.
Well, then, begin, begin. It's morning. We haven't too much time. Sarah? Leah? Where are those lazy servants? Where's the fish? Where's the new bread? Why haven't we begun? Leah and Sarah, come and help your mistress. I'll rouse the fools. There's work to do today.
And the day passed. A night fell on the town, silent and still and cold. The houses lay huddled and dark beneath the watching stars, and only the inn windows streamed with light.
And then the solution said to the Ethiopian...
Well, I remember when we first took over Macedonia. There was a girl...
Quiet, gentlemen! Quiet! Quiet! Prefect wishes to say a few words.
Gentlemen, men of Rome, mindful of Rome's historic destiny and of our good friend, King Herod, who has chosen alliance with Rome rather than a useless struggle, keep them under with a firm hand.
What's he saying up there?
I don't know. I don't know the big words. The soldier said...
You and your soldier.
Oh, he's not so bad. He brought me a trinket, see?
You and your Roman trinkets. I hate serving them. I'd like to spit in their cups each time I serve them.
You wouldn't dare.
Wouldn't I, though?
Here, here. What's this? What's this? Why are you standing idle? They're calling for more wine.
Let Leah serve them. She likes their looks.
Sarah.
Yes, mistress.
Please, Sarah. We've talked like this so many times.
Very well, mistress. But let her go first. Get up the stairs, you little soldier's comfort. I hope he pinches you.
Mistress, it's not my fault. Does Sarah have to
go? Go, go, both of you.
Well, that's a pretty little tempest for you. You ought to beat the girl. She's insolent and shows it.
We can't be too hard on her. Her father's dead, her brother's in the hills. And yet she used to be a merry child.
Oh, you always take their side. And yet you'd think a self-respecting inn could have some decent and well-mannered maids. But no such luck. Sullens and sluts, the lot of them. And why do you sit there, staring at the fire? So silent and so waiting. And so still.
I do not know. I'm waiting.
Waiting for what?
I do not know. For something new and strange. Something I've dreamt about in some deep sleep. Truer than any waking, more real than light. And there is light in it, and fire and peace. Newness of heart and strangeness like a sword. And all my body trembles under it. And yet I do not know.
You're tired, my dear. Well, we shall sleep soon.
No, I am not tired. But I am expectant as a runner is before a race, a child before a feast day, a woman at the gates of life and death. Expectant for us all, for all of us who live and suffer on this little earth with such small brotherhood. Something begins. Something is full of change and sparkling stars. Something is loose that changes all the world. And yet I cannot read it yet. I wait and strive and cannot find it. Hark, what's that?
Well, they can't come in. I don't care who they are. We have no room.
Go to the door.
Well?
Is this the inn? Sir, we are travelers and it is late and cold. May we enter?
Who is it?
Just a pair of country people. A woman and a man. I'm sorry for them.
My wife and I are weary. May we come in?
Yes, I'm sorry, my good man. We have no room tonight. The prefect's orders.
No room at all?
Not tonight. It may be in the morning.
Wait!
Must you mix in this?
Wait! Good sir, the enemy are in our house and we... Oh. I did not see your wife. I did not know.
Her name is Mary. She is near her time.
Yes, yes. Go get a lantern, quickly.
What?
Quickly. I once had a child. We have no room, that's true. And it would not be right, not here, not now. Not with those men whose voices you can hear, voices of death and iron. King Herod's voices. Better the friendly beasts. What am I saying? Oh, there is... We have a stable at the inn. Safe from the cold, at least. And if you choose, you shall be very welcome. It is poor, but the poor share the poor their crumbs of bread out of God's hand. So gladly. And that may count for something. Will you share it?
Gladly, and with great joy.
The lantern, husband.
Nay, I will take it. I can see the path. Come.
Well, I suppose that you must have your way, and any other night, well, they're decent people, or seem to be.
He has his arm about her, smoothing out the roughness of the path for her. So rough a path to tread with weary feet.
Oh, there's a frost upon the air tonight. I'm cold, or... Yes, I must be cold. That's it. That's it, now to be sure. Well, come, shut the door.
Something begins. Begins. Starlit and sunlit. Something walks abroad in flesh and spirit and fire... Something is loosed to change the shaken world.
The night deepens. The stars march in the sky. The prefect's men are gone. The inn is quiet, save for the sleepy servants and their mistress who clean the last soiled pots. The innkeeper drowses before the fire. But in the street outside...
We poor shepherds watch by night with a hay, with a home. A star shone over us so bright, we left our flocks to seek its light.
In excelsis Deo, gloria, gloria, in excelsis Deo.
Now how may such a matter be
with a hay, with a home?
That we of earth poor shepherds, we may look on Jesus' majesty, and yet the star says it is he.
It is he.
It is he.
Sing excelsis Deo, gloria, gloria, in excelsis Deo.
Who sings so late? How can they sing so late?
I'll go and see. Wait, I'll rub the window pane. It's rimed with frost.
They're shepherds from the hills.
Shepherds?
Yes, mistress.
Their hands are blue and stinging with the cold. And yet they seem all drunken, not with wine, but with good news. Their faces shine with it.
Cold and so late, poor creatures. Call them in. The prefect's men are gone.
Aye, but the master...
He's dozing. Do as I tell you.
Come in. Come in. Tarry a while and rest.
We cannot stay. We follow the bright star.
Gloria, Gloria, in excelsis Deo.
Where did they go? Would they not stay with us? Not one?
Mistress, they did not even look on me. They looked ahead. They have gone toward the stable of our inn. Aye, gone. But mistress, do you hear?
Hear what?
The tread of steeds on the hard ground. Iron hoofed, ringing clear. A company that comes from out the east. I've never seen such things. I am afraid. These are great lords, great kings, with strange and memorable beasts, and crowns upon their heads.
What's that? Lords, nobles, kings, here in Bethlehem, in our poor town? Well, what fortune. Oh, what fortune. Well, stand from the window there, you silly girl. I'll speak to them. My gracious noble masters, worthy and mighty kings, our humble inn is honored by your high nobility. Come in, come in. We fire and beds and wine. Come in, tarry a while and rest.
We cannot stay.
We follow the bright star.
Gloria, Gloria, in excelsis Deo.
I do not understand it. They're gone. They did not even look at me or pause, though there's no other inn. They follow the poor shepherds to the stable.
They would not tarry with us. No, not one.
And yet...
Peace, husband. You know well enough why none would tarry with us, and so do I. I lay a while in sleep, and a voice said to me, Gloria, Gloria, Gloria in excelsis Deo, the child is born. The child is born. And yet I did not rise and go to him, though I had waited and expected long. For I was jealous that my child should die and her child live. And so I have my judgment, and it is just.
If there was any fault, wife, it was mine. I did not wish to turn them from my door. And yet, I know I love the chink of money, love it too well, the good, sound, thumping coin. Love it, oh God, since I'm speaking truth, better than wife or fire or chick or child, better than country, better than good fame. Would sell my people for it in the street. Oh, for a price, but sell them. And there are many like me, and God pity us.
God pity us indeed, for we are human. And do not always see the vision when it comes, the shining change. Or if we see it, do not follow it, because it is too hard, too strange, too new, too unbelievable, too difficult, warring too much with common, easy ways. And now I know this, standing in this light, who have been half alive these many years, brooding on my own sorrow, my own pain, saying, I am a barren bough, expect nor fruit nor blossom from a barren bough. Life is not lost by dying. Life is lost minute by minute, day by dragging day, in all the thousand small, uncaring ways, the smooth, appeasing compromises of time which are King Herod and King Herod's men always and always. Life can be lost without vision, but not lost by death. Lost by not caring, not willing, not going on beyond the ragged edge of fortitude to something more, something no man has seen. You who love money, you who love yourself, you who love bitterness, and I who loved and lost and thought I could not love again, and all the people of this little town, rise up. The loves we had were not enough. Something is loosed to change the shaken world, and with it we must change.
Now that's well said.
Who speaks there? Who are you?
Who? Oh, my name is Dismas. I'm a thief. You know, the starved, flea-bitten sort of boy who haunts dark alleyways in any town, sleeps on a fruit sack, runs from the police, bets what he can and borrows what he must. That's me.
How did you get here?
By the door, innkeeper. The cellar door. The lock upon it's old. I could pick locks like that when I was 5.
What have you taken?
Nothing. I tried the stable first, and then your cellar. Slipped in, crept up, rolled underneath a bench. while all your honest backs were turned. And then?
And then?
Well, something happened. I don't know what. I didn't see your shepherds or your kings, but in the stable I did see the child. Just through a crack in the boards. One moment's space. That's all that I can tell you. Is he for me as well? Is he for me?
For you as well.
Is he for all of us? There are so many of us, worthy mistress. Beggars who show their sores and ask for alms. Women who cough their lungs out in the cold. Slaves. Oh, I've been one. Thieves and renegades who knife each other for a bite of bread, having no other way to get the bread. The vast sea of the wretched and the poor, whose murmur comes so faintly to your ears here in this fine country. Has he come to all of us, or just to you?
To every man alive.
I wish I could believe.
And if you did, no doubt you'd give up thieving.
Gently, lady, gently. Thieving's my trade, the only trade I know. But if it were true, if he had really come to all of us, I say to all of us, then, honest man or thief, I'd hang upon a cross for him. Would you? I see that I've said something you don't like. Something uncouth and bold and terrifying. And yet I'll tell you this. It won't be till each one of us is willing, not you nor me, but every one of us, to hang upon a cross for every man who suffers, starves, and dies, fight his sore battles as they were our own, and help him from the darkness and the mire, that there will be no crosses and no tyrants, no Herods, and no slaves. Well, it was pleasant thinking things might be so. And so I'll say farewell. I've taken nothing. And he was a fair child to look on.
Wait.
Why, what is it you see there by the window?
The dawn. The common day. The ordinary poor and mortal day. The shepherds and the kings have gone away. The great angelic visitors are gone. He is alone. He must not be alone.
I do not understand you, wife.
Nor I.
Do you not see? Because I see at last. Dismas, the thief, is right. He comes to all of us or comes to none. Not to my heart in joyous recompense for what I lost. Not to your heart or yours, but to the ignorant heart of all the world, so slow to alter, so confused with pain. Do you not see he must not be alone?
I think that I begin to see, and yet...
We are the earth his word must sow like wheat, and if it finds no earth, it cannot grow. We are his earth, the mortal and the dying, led by no star. The sullen and the slut, the thief, the selfish man, the barren woman, who have betrayed him once and will betray him. Forget his words. Be great a moment's space under the strokes of chance and then sink back into our small affairs. And yet, unless we go, his message fails.
Will he bring peace? Will he bring brotherhood?
He would bring peace. He would bring brotherhood. And yet he will be mocked at in the street.
Will he slay King Herod and rule us all?
He will not slay King Herod. He will die. There will be other Herods, other tyrants, great wars and ceaseless struggles to be free, not always won.
These are sad tidings of him.
No, no. They are glad tidings of great joy. Because he brings man's freedom in his hands, not as a coin that may be spent or lost, but as a living fire within the heart, never quite quenched, because he brings to all the thought, the wish, the dream of brotherhood. And though he die, his word shall grow like wheat, and every time a child is born in pain and love and freedom hardly won, born and gone forth to help and aid mankind, there will be women with a right to say, Gloria, Gloria in excelsis Deo, a child is born.
Gloria,
Gloria. Come, let us go. What can we bring to him? What mortal gifts?
I have a ribbon. It's my prettiest. It is not much, but He might play with it.
I have a little bell my father gave me. It used to make me merry. I've kept it. He may have it.
My pocket's empty and my rags are bare. But I can sing to him. That's what I'll do. And if he needs a thief to die for him...
I would give all my gold. I will give my heart.
And I my faith through all the years and years. Though I forget, though I am led astray, though after this I never see his face, I will give all my faith. Come, let us go. We the poor earth, but we the faithful earth. Not yet joyful, not yet triumphant, but faithful, faithful through the mortal years. Come.
Come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Come ye.
I've just heard Helen Hayes and Jose Ferreira in A Child is Born by Stephen Vincent Benet.
The Textron Theater on Tuned to Yesterday from December 22nd, 1945 on CBS. It's an hour of Christmas on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the second of three broadcasts the Hallmark Playhouse brought forth of The Story of Silent Night, the CBS episode heard on December 22nd, 1949.
Tonight, from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Mr. James Hilton in Herta Paoli's The Story of Silent Night on the Hallmark Playhouse.
This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we tell you the story of how that wonderful Christmas song, Silent Night, came to be written 130 years ago. This story was told recently to a writer named Herta Paoli by the grandson of the man who wrote the music of Silent Night. Christmas, the year of our Lord 1948. 1948 years from the miracle of Bethlehem. Christmas, the birth date of the Prince of Peace, the birth date of hope and faith, the birth date of a miracle. In Bethlehem, three kings knelt and proffered gifts from the east. Since Bethlehem, many gifts, recorded and unrecorded, have been created of man's love of God and humbly offered in his honor. What you are to hear tonight will tell you of one such gift offered by two humble men 130 years ago this Christmas week. This, too, is the story of a miracle that was born one silent night.
All is gone.
We are going back now through the arches of the years, back 130 Christmas Eve, to meet a man named Joseph Moore, Father Joseph Moore. Those voices you can just barely distinguish are all voices that have said Merry Christmas through the years. Their sentiment remains and lingers on the Christmas air like a blessing. And now we are in the Austrian Alps, in a small village. The year is 1818. In the center of the town, near a swift-flowing stream, stands a whitewashed church with a tall, red-topped steeple. There are the church bells. They have a special joyousness tonight, as all church bells seem to have on Christmas Eve. Come now, we'll meet Father Moore. He's in his study, and his heart's a little heavy, because the church organ has broken down, and there'll be no music for the Christmas service.
Good evening, Father Moore.
Oh, good evening. Come in.
You don't know me, Father, but I'm in your parish. I've come from one of the charcoal makers' families. A child has been born to them tonight, and they beg that you come and bless the baby that it may live and prosper.
Have I time to go and return for my sermon?
Yes, Father.
Well, then I'll go at once.
And so it was that on Christmas Eve of the year 1818, Father Joseph Moore followed a woman up the rocky foothills of the Alps to a simple hut and blessed a baby on Christmas Eve.
Like a miracle that her child should be born this night.
Birth itself is a miracle. God has blessed her with a beautiful son on the most holy night of the year. And God has blessed me by guiding me here.
Father Moore walked down the snowy mountain, transfixed, transfigured. He thought of the baby and of the sacred night, and words began to stir and form themselves within him.
Holy night, silent night, holy night.
All is calm, all is bright.
Silent night, holy night.
All is calm.
Round yon virgin mother and child. Round yon virgin mother and child. Holy infant, so tender and mild.
How simple is the coming of a miracle to a stable in Bethlehem, to the heart of a man. After Father Moore had solemnized the Mass, he sat all night in his study, writing down the words that filled his heart. And when dawn came, he took the poem he had written to Franz Gruber.
Father, this is a fine poem.
I rather heard it as a song, Franz. I thought you might set it to music.
Thank you, Father. I should like to try.
And so the words that Father Moore had heard on Christmas Eve became music to Franz Gruber on Christmas Day. And before nightfall, he came to Father Moore's house.
I've written the music, Father. I wrote it for guitar and voice rather than the organ. After all, we have no way of knowing when the organ can be used.
Please sing it. Let me hear it.
Silent night.
Austrian province lies a valley, the Zillertal. And from the Zillertal, a few days after Christmas, came the organ builder, Karl Mauracher.
Well, now, Father Moore, Mr. Gruber, I think I have the organ in working order now. The mice had eaten holes in the bellows, but this leather patch should solve all your problems.
May I try it?
Well, go ahead. Song before, Father?
Franz and I wrote it at Christmas.
I've never heard a song like it. Would you teach me? I know people would like to learn it down in the Zillertal.
We'll be happy to teach it to you. Won't we, Franz?
We will be honored.
And so the hymn that was born on Christmas night started its journey out into the wide world. Karl Mauracher took the song down into the Zillertal. Silent Night was on its way from a small church high in the Alps to the cathedrals of the earth. All the children in the Zillertal loved to sing, and they all sang well. But of them all, the ones with the most beautiful voices were the four Strasser children, Caroline, Joseph, Andreas, and Amelie. And the organ builder worked painstakingly to teach them the song. On Christmas Eve, they stood in the doorway and sang it as a Christmas gift for their parents.
Wonderful Christmas gift.
You sang that beautifully. I'm proud of you.
The organ builder taught it to us.
Thank you, Mr. Mauracher.
I hoped in the spring when Mr. Strasser takes the gloves to sell at the Fin Leipzig, perhaps he would find a way for you to sing the song there.
Sing? At the fair?
We aren't good enough to do that.
We could never do it.
Why do you want him to sing the song there, Mr. Mauracher? Well, to me, this song is almost like a song from heaven. The words came to Father Moore on Christmas Eve. The melody to the schoolmaster, Gruber, on Christmas Day. They gave it to their parish, and then it was given to me to carry down into the valley of the Zillertal. I, in turn, give it to you to take to Leipzig. Someone in Leipzig will take it on the next step of its journey.
Where is it going?
Who knows, little Amelie? Perhaps everywhere.
But who in Leipzig?
I don't know that either. But someone will make him or herself known to you, and the song from heaven will go on across the earth. Will you take it to Leipzig and send it on its way?
Oh, yes. Of course we will.
Who are you children?
They are my children, sir. I'm Strasser from the Zillertal. This is my glove stand. We're here at the fair to sell chamois gloves.
Your children have beautiful voices, Mr. Strasser.
Yes. They sing every afternoon, and the people stop to listen to them just as you saw today.
And do they also buy the gloves?
Yes, I think it helps business. In any case, it does not harm it.
It was their song that caught my attention.
The song, sir?
Yes, I've never heard it before.
My name is Polenz. I am the Director General of Music in the Kingdom of Saxony.
The Director General of Music?
Yes. I wanted to ask you children if you would care to appear at a concert one of these days.
A concert?
Oh, that would be terrible.
I'm afraid they aren't experienced enough, Mr. Polenz.
We must do it. We promised Mr. Morocco we've got to do it.
It doesn't matter if we aren't good, as long as we sing it.
We'll be happy to sing at a concert, Mr. Polenz.
Well, we may not be happy, but we'll do it.
Good. Next Tuesday, then, at the Gewandhaus, there will be an orchestra concert. Perhaps at the close of the concert, you will honor us with this song. The king and queen will be there.
The king and queen?
Your Majesty.
Your Highness, we are honored.
Honored?
Well, children, don't look at the floor. Look at us. We want to see your faces.
I think they have a slight case of fright, Your Majesty.
We don't want you to be afraid of us. We have children just about your age.
Mr. Polenz has told us you sing a wonderful song that you call a song from heaven. We're looking forward to hearing it.
If we just didn't have to sing it before all those people.
Now, some of them are the same people you sang it for at the fair.
Your Majesty, it's almost time for the concert to start. With your permission.
Just close your eyes, children, and pretend you're singing at home.
And the king and queen smiled and listened. And listening with them was the director of the Berlin Cathedral Choir. It was he who heard the song in Leipzig and took it on the next step of its journey to Berlin and the court of the emperor. Voices are the men of the Berlin Cathedral Choir singing for the Emperor on Christmas Day. There's the Emperor in the royal pew singing with them. No, he stopped singing. Look at his face. He's glaring at that hymn book.
What do you mean you don't know who wrote that song? Are you my concertmaster or are you not my concertmaster?
Well, I am your concertmaster at the moment, sire.
Well, look at the hymn book. Just look at this page. What does it say?
Sire... Silent Night.
And what else does it say?
Author and composer unknown.
I want to know who wrote that hymn. Concert master, you've spoiled my whole Christmas. The trees, the gifts, even the dinner. If a thing is unknown, I wish it made known. I want order in my hymn book. I want it as soon as possible. You'd start out today in search of the name of the composer of Silent Night.
Yes, sir.
So it was that concertmaster Ludwig Erck started out to trace the origin of Silent Night. He went to big cities, he went to small villages. He talked to the young, to the old. Long, worrisome months kept pace beside him. And at last, even though he knew what he had to face in the anger of the king, he knew he had to give up. He sat, alone and disconsolate, in a small village inn near the Austrian border.
Will there be anything else, sir?
No, no, that'll be all. Oh, hush.
You don't like the bird's song, sir?
The bird? I thought it was my own mind. That's the song I've been hunting for. Who taught it to him?
I don't know, sir. A traveler sold him to us. The man said he had bought the bird in Salzburg in St. Peter's Abbey.
Salzburg? Well, then, I shall go to Salzburg.
to Salzburg, to St. Peter's Abbey, which had been built 1,000 years after the birth of Christ. Concertmaster Erk walked through a dark pillared archway into a vaulted room and stood where Father Joseph Moore had stood so many times in the years gone by.
Silent night? No, I have no recollection of it. How did you happen to come to us, sir?
I heard a bullfinch in the tomb, Father. The innkeeper told me the bird came from this abbey.
No, we don't allow any of our students to train songbirds here. We consider it a cruel practice to deprive God's creatures of their freedom.
I see. Well, perhaps it was a mistake.
Come, it's late. Have some dinner with us and then spend the night.
What is this?
Come, Ambrosius Pensteiner, the choir inspector here at the Abbey. And this is young Felix Gruber.
Oh, my ear! I'm going to tell my father on you.
I was told about your inquiries concerning the bullfinch. This young rascal trained him.
You trained him?
It didn't hurt the bird.
Where did you learn that song that you taught him?
The song?
You heard the gentleman, the song.
My father wrote it.
Your father?
Yes, sir.
Where is your father?
In the village of Helene.
Helene? Mr. Pensteiner, do you think you could arrange for this boy to have a day or two off so I could go with him to Helene?
Well, you'll have to talk to the abbot, but I'm sure it can be arranged.
And now young Felix Gruber and Concertmaster Erk are tucked in a fine sleigh behind the team of the abbey's finest horses. The bells sing out gaily across the clean, crisp air, and the snow crunches under the horses' hooves. Now they are going through the pass above Helene, and now they are skimming down the main street to the market square before the church, and now they are pulling up before the small, friendly house which is the home of Franz Gruber. And so it was at last. Concertmaster Erk sat with the composer of Silent Night.
Mr. Gruber, I bring you and Father Moore the compliments of the king and the whole country.
Well. Father Moore is dead. God rest his soul. These 6 years pass.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes. Yes, he was a fine man. Do you have all 6 stanzas to the song?
No, we have only 4.
Felix, hand me the guitar, please.
Here, Father.
Silent night,
are taken down, and above the music will be the names Gruber and Moore. Concertmaster Erk walks out through the snow after dinner, and as he walks, he looks up at the snow-covered Alps that Father Moore loved. And Franz Gruber watches him from the window and wishes regretfully that Father Joseph Moore had been here to see his song brought back in triumph to the village of Helene. Have journeyed back 130 Christmas Eves to meet a man named Father Joseph Moore and the schoolteacher, Franz Gruber, and Karl Mauracher, the organ builder, and the Strassers, and all the rest who had a part in carrying the song from a village high in the Alps down into the world. Yes, now it has bridged 130 Christmas Eves. Now it has been sung by the old and the young, the rich and the poor. It has been sung in every language, in every country of the world. it has become a prayer. A prayer that men can live together in one world as brothers, and that there be indeed peace on earth, goodwill toward men. You have heard the story of a miracle. A miracle that was born one silent night. For all of us here in the Playhouse, for our director-producer, D. Engelbach, for Jean Holloway, who dramatized tonight's story, for the Hallmark dealers whom you see in your own cities, for everyone who is proudly a member of the Hallmark family, we wish you, our friends, a very, very Merry Christmas. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Look for Hallmark cards that are sold only in stores that have been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember Hallmark cards when you care enough to spend the very best. This is Frank Goss saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time when James Hilton returns to present Herbert Marshall in Lost Horizon and the following week McLeod's Folly starring Robert Young. This program came to you from the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Hallmark Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from December 22nd, 1949 on CBS. And that wraps this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Happy holidays.